Hello and welcome to Just Markets Podcast 365. My name is Shay and today is April 22nd, 2019. I hope you guys had a wonderful weekend. I've been fighting a cold since last week. I think it's a flu, and I fought it over this weekend as well. So hopefully I'm getting better, but there's definitely a few things to discuss that we heard about that affected the oil price to finally break through its resistance level. I want to talk about this article from CNBC that talked about auto sales that we have talked about actually on this podcast a couple weeks ago. And also, there's a few other things that I want to talk about as far as the pullback in this market. So let's get into it. So the first article I want to talk about is this article on CNBC about auto sales and how top auto executives are worried about them, the auto sales. January and February really had a really sharp downturn in new vehicle sales here in the U.S. And a lot of the industry professionals have been downplaying it, but some of these executives are really, really worried about the demand being down almost 4%. So that's a good article to read up on. Let me just give you a few highlights from the article. It talks about how Most executives at best are, accepting that this year, 2019, is going to be a stagflation environment for auto sales. And that's their best case scenario. Now, a lot of them are pushing out some new vehicles, some new trucks, some new crossover vehicles, everything like that. But they're worried that, the sales are not going to reach their expectations. And the reason why this is so worrisome, it's because, remember, I've always talked about this. I'm going to talk about it again. Auto sales and home sales are very, very important to our economy. They are the two largest purchase items that an average person makes in their lifetime. And many of them do it multiple times. And many of them do it, in an increasing manner, meaning that they buy a broader, more expensive product as they age, as they get older, right? So if the two of the largest ticket items is struggling, how is our economy going to grow at full potential? It's not. And auto sales and home sales are also the biggest multiplier for job growth. So we have been seeing a lot of job growth in this country in the past 6 months. Employment picture has gotten better, and it's been getting better for the past 10 years, but it definitely has gotten better the past 6 months as well. But you have to look at these weakening points in the economy that are really, really affecting that's going to really be effective for our economy here in the future and does not look good for our full potential. So if auto sales do not sell above trend the past 2-3 years, we are not going to get through the 3% GDP number that we all want as we feel as full potential. We're going to go back down to that 2.2-2.3 number again, and that is not an optimal level. That's actually our long-term average now, surprisingly, but that's not a great number if we are going to issue the amount of debt we're issuing. Last year, we issued $1.2 trillion in new debt, right? We had a budget deficit that was $800 billion, and then we had so many other extra items on top of that. So if you go do the math, last year, we had a budget deficit, fiscal deficit of $1.2 trillion. There's no way that we can be paying for this growth, double, and not get out of it. So this is a major, major issue for an economy like ours that's dependent on growth. And, auto sales is one of them. Home sales have recovered a little bit here. Now they're a much bigger ticket item, but they're highly sensitive to rising rates. We have seen the 10-year come up here a little bit at 2.58 now and 2.59. So it makes it a little bit more expensive to buy a home. But we're seeing areas of weakness now, even in the housing market. Over the weekend, I saw an article in I believe the Wall Street Journal, where it talked about how home sales in Silicon Valley, that has been really the leading leader in home prices increasing, how they have begun to take a dip, that demand for new homes there is dropping. Think about that. You know, that's a major issue. That's a growth sector for our economy nationally. You know, you have Google and Twitter and all the major tech from Apple, everybody's there, right? And if you're having a slowdown in demand for homes there, that's another sign of weakness. So as an investor, we have to be very, very careful as investing in a slowing economy, because a slowing economy means that we're going to have a slower rate of growth, which means that earnings are going to be slower, growing, are going to be growing slower than their average, the recent average, and revenue is also going to be affected by that. I mean, that's the first thing that's going to be affected, right? So that's why you always have to be very, very careful when you're talking about, you know, these indicators are the ones we always have to look at. These are the type of articles we should be looking at when we're investing, because they are going to have the biggest impact. That's why I talk about so many economic indicators. That's why I talk about home sales. That's why I talk about auto sales and what their annual average is, because that is going to tell you the direction of the economy, not anything else. It's not the budget deficit. It's not the fiscal deficit. None of that matters unless we are selling. We are a consumer-based economy. That's 75%, 70% of our economy. If that area is not improving, it's not getting better, it's not growing, our economy is not going to grow. Period. Now let's get into the oil price issue, right? So over the weekend, we heard a rumor that the US is going to eliminate all waivers against Iran. There were a few countries that did have that. It was Taiwan, India, China, Japan, I believe, if you know, and maybe a couple of others. So as of today, officially, we heard that all waivers as of May 1st will not be allowed, and countries must follow the US sanctions. Otherwise, they will be sanctioned themselves. So now, why is this a major issue? So this has caused the oil price that was near that resistance level of 64 of, you know, for WTI and the 72.73 number on the Brent crude to break out finally, right? So this is not an economic reason, right? This is not a demand reason. It's a supply issue, right? So commodities, as we all know, are affected by supply and demand. So one of the other has to be affected in order for the price to be adjusted. For example, in this case, it's supply. So what's going on is that we have an economy that's already slowing down in the US and globally, right? So we have a global economy that's slowing down, and now what we're doing is that we're creating additional headwind for the economy by raising oil prices, by raising waivers, right? So you've had Venezuela that's off track, right? They're not producing really any oil. We have Libya that's producing 1.1, 1.2 million barrels of oil a day, but that is risky every single day, because that oil production could go down to like 300 million, you know, if they have a major issue. So you have a huge amount of risk premium now that's being built in into the oil price itself, right? And on top of that, now you have this Iran waiver, right? So I get what they're doing, what they're trying to do, but this is going to cause economic issues for the global economy that's already weakening. You know, even though China showed better than expected numbers, I don't believe it. India is already getting weak. You have Europe is already really weak. You know, we saw the economic numbers, you know, come out of Germany, and those are all pretty weak. All this is good for is oil producers. Now, you know, the administration has come out and said they're going to make OPEC and others, you know, produce more oil. But that's something they've been trying to do for the past, you know, a year and a half to 2 years. And as we, you know, we've talked about on this podcast, is actually OPEC, generally speaking, like likes of, you know, Saudi Arabia and others, have actually decreased production of oil, not increased it. I just don't see Saudi Arabia and others increase production just because the U.S. tells them to. Now, I know there are a sworn enemy of the U.S. I know Saudi Arabia is a sworn enemy of Iran. I get it. There's a huge political divide there. I get that. But I just don't see them doing it because Saudi Arabia wants to sell oil for the highest price possible, right? That's what they want to do. They may do it, maybe incrementally, but I just don't see them doing it on a large scale. And Russia is actually friends with Iran. So, you know, so I just don't see them increasing production. I hope they do. It will help the economy globally. But I just don't see it happening. So now we have another headwind. Now, on the investment side, oil prices finally broken out above that resistance level. It was not for economic reasons, but it was for geopolitical reasons. So I'm not sure on how long it will last. And these are the type of headline risks as investors, as I've been investing for over 14 years now, I always look at as a portfolio manager. These are not your fundamental reasons. These are your headline risk reasons, and these are things that are not left to, you know, you can't really account for these when you're investing. You have to look at your fundamentals most of the time, but these are other things that do affect our investments. And if the oil prices rise from here significantly, from here on out, and the economy is not getting better, and if things change and production increases, that's going to bring the oil price back down very quickly, right? And that's why I would say that be careful if you're going to put money to work here, and if you expect additional geopolitical risk, you know, they're in the Middle East or in Venezuela or anywhere else, you know, these are the things that really can cause a lot of headache for investors. So just keep this in mind as you're investing money. This is a major issue. These are the things that really matter, and I hope this it doesn't affect the economy as a whole, our global economy as a whole, but because you have China and India, India especially is a consumer-based economy. If they cannot buy cheap oil from Iran, they're going to have major issues. They're already having major economic issues. They contribute a lot to GDP growth globally, and that's an issue. So about a week and a half ago, I talked to you guys about that this market is setting up for a sell-off. It's setting up for a technical correction. And it's been about a week and a half. And I said then that it's not immediate. It's not going to happen right away. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It may take a few weeks. And where we're at today is I feel like more and more it's getting closer to it now. And the market's really been in a tight range since then, right? Now, I want to kind of set it up for you on what I'm thinking and how I'm thinking about it, right? So if you think about fundamentals and then technicals, right? So let's think about our fundamentals. So from a macro standpoint, we have weakening macro data in manufacturing. We have a weakening data when it comes to some of the leading indicators. We have these data points are not like really weak where we're calling for a recession and you have a 20% correction in the market. These data points are weaker than they have been since last year, right? So things have to come down a little bit here. So we have fundamental data, and then we have home sales that have recovered a little bit, but not to a point where they will have a huge impact. But then you have auto sales that are the analyzed number looks weaker than expected. So there's a lot of fundamentals back there, and now you have a higher oil price that is a tax on the consumer, especially in a consumer-based economy where you have you have a lot of consumption, and if somebody's spending $10 more on their daily or weekly gas pump, that's $10 less that is what they're going to spend on other things, right? So that money that money is being taxed. You know, that is a headwind for a consumer-based economy. It is usually not as much of a headwind for a manufacturing-based economy like China, but China is trying to become a consumer-based economy, and they have done a lot of transition there. And India is one of them. It's also a consumer-based economy. Most of Europe is a consumer-based economy, and then of course the U.S. is a major consumer-based economy, right? So that's where, you know, you're seeing that globally and also in the U.S., right? And then you have technicals, right? You have had the RSI that I've talked about. the MACD, all those technicals that most people use out there are showing a borderline correction coming here. So I'm not, you know, going on a limb here, but my own model is showing that, you know, the one I've created over the years, that is also showing the possibility of a correction in this market. And I initially thought it would be around 4 or 5%, but now I want to increase that range. The reason I want to increase that range is because so far the earnings that have come in, revenue have come in, they're as expected. I was expecting them to be better than expected, especially on the earnings side. But earnings have not come better than expected. They're coming in as expected, and guidance for many companies is negative. So at a higher percentage, most companies that are guiding the next few quarters or next 12 months are guiding lower than the initial expectations. So that's why I'm saying that this range could be more. You know, it needs to be larger. For a typical short-term technical, you know, correction here, maybe we on the S&P 500, for example, we probably get down to around 2800, 2790 range, right, for like a 4% correction. But if this lasts a little bit longer, and and if things don't change, we can get down to probably back down to about 2600, 2660, 2650 in that range. So that range is pretty large, right? You're looking at from a 4% to almost a 9-10% possible pullback in this market. Now, there is an old saying in the industry, and you may have heard of it, is sell in May and go away. It's historically, it's been that, you know, the summertime, May onto the summer, the market usually corrects, the volume is low, and things don't go that well during the summertime, and things begin to recover around August time, and then boom, you know, like you pop up during December, right? Now, it could be that way this time around. It can't be. It doesn't matter. But what we're looking at today is, you know, the technicals, the fundamentals are showing that things are not looking great for the market as a whole. So that's a major issue. And the leaders, you know, like Apple's and others, like, you know, if you had Apple that were expecting, you know, a blockbuster number on iPhone sales or other, you know, blockbuster number on other things, you know, for these major contributors, then I can say that, we may not have a correction because they lead the market. You know, there are always leaders in any market. And in this case, Apple's also looking pretty weak itself. So there's a lot of reasons to be worried, you know, as an investor. Now, one last thing I want to talk about is just how should you react when you hear me say things like this, right? If you have a diversified strategy, if you have an asset allocation where you're invested in stocks and bonds, you have, you know, stocks and equities internationally and domestically, you have bonds that are international and domestic, you have a nice cash position, if you're a high net worth investor, you have, you know, real estate, or you have REITs, a real estate investment trust and hedge fund and private equity. If you have a diversified portfolio, maybe on the equity side, you can make some tactical changes, but because you have a diversified portfolio, you don't really need to make that many changes. And I don't know if you're managing money yourself, or if you've hired an advisor, or a portfolio manager out there that's the running money for you, I want you to go and look at your portfolio and understand where you're invested and how you're invested. And if you're diversified, you don't have too much to worry about, because diversification, asset allocation, that's what it does. It tries to dampen volatility. And that's good if you are middle-aged to older, because that's what you need. You cannot afford to lose money in 10, 20, 30% in a single, in a single year, right? That's the point of asset allocation. It's to give you a decent return at a decent cost. And cost in this case is always risk, right? So if you're diversifying away risk in different asset classes that are low correlating to no no correlation or to maybe slightly high correlation, you're still diversifying away some of that risk, right? So that's good. You know, you probably don't have to make many changes because you have structured your portfolio to withstand these small, you know, aspects of volatility, these small time frames of volatility. You don't have to make a major change, right? Now, you can choose to make a tactical change, say, hey, I want to reduce some of my U.S. equity and go to cash or buy some U.S. bonds or whatever else out there, right? Or buy some gold, you know, things like that. But you don't have to. You don't have to do it because you have already done it. Now, if you are one of those investors that are all stocks, all large cap stocks or all stocks, all equity, you know, investor, you know, and that's pretty high risk, you know, allocation there. You have 5 stocks, 10 stocks, 20 stocks, whatever, I don't know. This is something that you should definitely think about lowering your risk level, because in a risky portfolio like that, which I also have, and I also, you know, also do, you have to be very, very careful, because you can, you know, lose a lot of money very quickly because of the concentration. Now, at the end of the day, if you want to make money in the market, you have to be concentrated. You have to take a risk, right? Asset allocation is great for people who've made their money and now they need to protect it and grow it at a decent rate so they can live their life comfortably and get a decent rate of return. Now, but if you're one of those people that are young, you know, they're in their 20s and early 30s, and, you know, are really getting into your prime of your career or your investment career, you know, you want to take more risk, right? You have a longer runway, if you will. So in that environment, you must, you know, you should be taking a little more risk, but it needs to be thoughtful. So, you know, take that, you know, and think about it and see where you're allocated and see if there are things in your portfolio which you think are highly volatile and will not be impacted greatly by maybe another downturn here in the market of a 4-9%. That's something you should definitely think about. And that's something I'm going to think about. So, you know, just food for thought, think about it and make decisions for yourself. I'm trying to give you all the information I can. I'm not always going to be right. I'm not always going to be wrong either. But, you know, the key is to be more right more often than being wrong, right? That's the point. And if we're following a disciplined process of following fundamentals and technicals at the same time and thinking about macro risk and geopolitical risk and headline risk all at the same time, we should be doing a good job of investing for ourselves, right? So that's the goal here. So anyways, I hope you guys had a wonderful day today, Monday, and I did. I really had a great conversation today, I felt, and please leave me any feedback on Apple iTunes. Please rate us 5 stars if you can. Please subscribe and follow. And until tomorrow, I wish you guys all the best. Please remember, this podcast is for information purposes only, and presenters will make every effort to provide accurate information, but assumes no responsibility for accuracy. You should not construe any such information or other materials as legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and there cannot be any assurance that the future performance of any specific investment strategy or products or non-investment related content made reference to directly or indirectly in this podcast will be profitable, equal any corresponding indicated historical performance levels, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Due to various factors, including changing market conditions or applicable laws, the content may no longer be reflective of current opinions or positions. Moreover, you should not assume that any discussion or information contained in this podcast serves as a receipt or as a substitute for personalized investment advice from your advisor. To the extent you should have any questions regarding the applicability of any specific issues discussed, you are encouraged to consult with your professional advisor of your choosing.